I am your brother. I am your brother. The story of Joseph occupies more space in the book of Genesis than any other single individual. More than Adam, more than Noah, more than Abraham, more than Isaac, and more than even his father Jacob. This quickly reminded me that we are not dealing with just an ordinary person. We're dealing with a young man who, in spite of a rough start and a challenging childhood, survived what many of us would have failed at, until he rose to prominence to become the governor of a foreign country, Egypt. The full story of Joseph, his pitfalls and his triumphs, his journey into a forgotten prison dungeon, and his eventual rise to the top leadership position is recorded in Genesis chapters 37 through chapter 50. 13 chapters, 416 verses, full of intrigue, full of deception, lies, bad decisions, triumph, but eventually forgiveness. As you read again this story, be mindful that in all of these things, God was leading. It is easier to acknowledge this when you read about someone else, but maybe not as easy as when you are starting the journey blindfolded or even stripped of your own dignity. During this week, other speakers, I'm sure, covered the early training and crucibles of Joseph. And today, we are going to deal and look for a little bit at his triumph, his rise to leadership, and his restoration of family relations. To fully appreciate the journey that this young Hebrew boy took, we must understand from whence he came. Was he born with a gold spoon in his mouth, as some might imagine? Could he do anything except succeed, as some would argue? Or was he predestined to be in the right place at the right time? Every once in a while, you know, we happen upon a life that represents a contrast to the lowest common denominator of today's low-level majority opinion. Occasionally, such a person emerges as we are stunned, and then we are stunned by his greatness. Recently, I was in conversation with a young professional who is from the same district in which I was born. His father was an alcoholic before the child came to this earth and remained one many years until he died. His mother had no special training, and yet she believed enough in her child to make sure he got an education. When the time came for him to branch out on his own, the foundation was already firmly set, and he's doing well in his chosen field. As I said to him, you know, Basil, if we look at this, none of us could write the script. It doesn't matter how good you are, none of us, you nor I, could write the script as to what would happen to us. But somewhere, there was a good teacher, there was a good mother, there were good parents, and more than that, there's always a good God who is leading. So regardless of how you are treated, in spite of the unfair accusations, in spite of rejection or abandonment, in spite of the abuse or grudge, you can still rise to the top when you refuse to be resentful or choose to wallow in bitterness or refuse to forgive those who misuse you. Do you know that it takes more effort to dislike someone than it is to love them? Do you know that when I love you, and am at peace with you and with myself. I do not have to remember to talk to you or even laugh with you or laugh at your jokes. I do it because I respect you. When I do not like you, I have to make sure I don't sit in the same pew with you when you come to church. And I have to make sure that every point you raise in Sabbath school, I must object to any suggestion you make. And any point that you make in any meeting, I must make sure to counter that point because I don't like you. We need to grow up and understand that it takes more energy to dislike somebody than it is to love them. So since I'm old, do the right thing. Love them anyway. It's easier. Just love them. What should we know about Joseph? There are three major stages in his life that I want to bring to your attention this morning. Charles Swindoll suggests that Joseph's story is a vivid detail of his charisma and the arrogance in his youth to a compassionate middle-aged man. But it reaches a dramatic rag-to-riches tale replete with every human passion. Love, hate, ambition, glory, jealousy, and fury. Tears of joy and grief were shed. Garments were rent in anguish. It is a gripping saga of treachery and deception, of betrayal and forgiveness. Stage one of Joseph's life was Joseph was a love child. But during the early years, his family was in transition and everyone was unsettled. His father's first wife, Leah, did not like the children of Rachel, her sister, who was the mother of Joseph. His father was trying to get away from his grandfather. And even when Jacob had the opportunity to leave to return home, his children needed special protection because he was still fearful of his brother Esau. That's the point in which Joseph comes into the story. Jacob was an aging man when Joseph was born. But age was not the problem. Jacob was a deceiver, but he was also a passive man. Too busy for his family, too preoccupied and unconcerned with what was occurring in the lives of any of his children. And Joseph, in his early years, had to contend with the tragic rape of his sister Dinah. And he no doubt knew of the plot of his brothers to seek revenge by slaughtering the men who raped her. Even in this awful situation, Jacob was more concerned about his public relations image than with the rest of the people who lived around him. Joseph was still a teenager, and he had to deal with the tragic death of his mother when she died in childbirth with his brother Benjamin. It was a sad situation for Jacob as well as for Joseph. When Reuben committed incest with one of his father's concubines, the family was once again devastated. Please know that when Jacob heard about this incident, he did nothing, and no mention was recorded in scripture until the time of Jacob's death when he cut Reuben from his will. That's where Joseph came in. At age 17, Joseph suffered enslavement, accusation, and imprisonment. And during his teen years, he enjoyed the favorite son status. The gift of a coat of many colors created within the family anger, jealousy, and a deceitful people. This gift, Ellen White said, seemed to display evidence of his partiality and excited a suspicion that there was a catalyst for much of the trouble in the family. Joseph's brothers had come to despise him so severely that they could not even speak a kind word to him. Try living in a family such as that. As if that coat was not enough, he was also a dreamer. I am your brother. Young people, not everyone you go to church with or live with like dreamers. There are times in which the greatest killers of dreamers are those closest to you. They are the first ones to tell you that you can't achieve anything and how you can't do any better because of who your family members are. They are quick to tell you that you do not have the right address and you did not go to the right school. But I'm here to tell you that eagles don't dwell in sparrow's nest. Don't ever let anyone tell you that your dreams are unattainable. If you have a desire to fly, then flap your wings and fly. One of the greatest satisfactions I have had is to watch people tell me that I can't do something and then I go ahead and do it anyway. Young people, build your nest where eagles live. Think big and let your actions say that you are important. And after a while, even if it is not so when you begin, you will come to believe it yourself. Where I come from, you know, we never had money or prestige. What we had was ambition and a never say die attitude. Growing up, I didn't even know we were poor until some years later in a sociology class, the teachers defined poverty and told me I was poor. And I'm like, man, I didn't know this all my life. I didn't know I was poor. If I was better off, I would not be talking to you today. What we had were hard working parents and supportive church members and supportive teachers who told us and told me that I could be anything that I wanted to be. And for some strange reason, a number of us believe that. Today, I stand on the verge of beginning a third phase of my own life, and I have no regrets for it. The challenges of your home and your childhood must never define who you are. Any failures you might have encouraged, any mistakes you might have made, it is you who must determine that the game is not over until it is over. Because by the time Joseph was 30 years old, he had the glorious opportunity to get even with his brothers, but he did not. Instead, he blessed them and he forgave them. It is in this stage that some of the greatest lessons are taught. Now, Joseph's triumph and his rise to leadership did not begin the day that Pharaoh called him from prison. His triumph did not begin when he ran from the grasp of Mrs. Potiphar. His triumph began when he learned to forgive his brothers at Shechem. He had a bittersweet childhood, but God had a plan for his life. And Ellen White in Patriarchs and Prophets, page 214, said, "The mark prosperity which attended everything placed under Joseph's care was not the result of a direct miracle, but his industry, his care, and his energy were crowned with divine blessing." Joseph attributed his success to the favor of God, and even his idolatrous master accepted this as a secret of his unparalleled prosperity. You do not set your sails during a storm. You set your sail before the storm comes up. When you set your sail in that way during the, then when the storm comes, you'll already be ready. Young people, you don't pray to overcome temptation while you're in the temptation. You pray about that before you get in the temptation. Because if you wait until you are tempted, chances are you'll not remember to pray. We are celebrating Education Day today. So I must tell you that it is a good thing to get a good education. But I must also tell you, it is better to get the right education. You should not expect to get out of your child's education what you have not put in. Every parent wants the best for their children, and you should never be satisfied to settle with anything less. If the schools operated by the Seventh-day Adventist Church are not good enough, then you must ask yourself that all-important question. What is it that I want? What can I do to make these schools better? How can I make it good enough for me and for my children? The financial support you give through your local church is appreciated and it's necessary. But is that all you want? Is that the only contribution you think you should make? 2 hours on Saturday morning is not enough to supply the teaching your child requires and the foundation that you must lay. So here is my question. Will your child be able to stand like Joseph did? Should he or she be faced with a similar situation? Would your child be able to represent you in a strange household like the young maiden did in Naaman's house? Have you ever wondered how is it that a king and a governor could listen to a maid child? What was it that was so special about this child? I want to think that they saw in her the God that she served. And so when she said, I want you to go someplace else, it was not a big deal. They already trusted her. If Samuel came to your church today to select a king, could you present your child to God as someone who has found favor with God? Standing in your midst today might be a young man and a young woman who is supposed to be king. You and I have no other responsibility except to bring them up in the way that we know best and let God take care of the rest. Don't get me wrong. You don't have to go to a Seventh-day Adventist institution to contribute to society or to go to heaven. Certainly not. But if you choose not to, then do not condemn or criticize those who do until you understand their motivation. 2 full years had passed since Joseph interpreted the butler's dream and he was restored, yet nothing happened. Those years were neither exciting nor eventful. Month after month, and nothing happened. And if ever there was a cause to complain, Joseph would have had my vote. But before you vote, never be unmindful that when God is in control of your life, many things are happening that you might not be aware of. Somewhere, He's working things out, and we are being given strength to prepare for the greater things ahead. God was shaping Joseph for greatness, and it is in the wilderness that He takes us and teaches us the lessons He wants us to learn. The university of life does not have walls. And sometimes God even leaves us and we think that He has forsaken us. You and I might live out our lives without even hearing or knowing that the God of the universe desires to tell us. In that lonely place of the desert, You might even find yourself stripped of all the things you hang on to for comfort, all the stuff you felt you needed through life. But the point is, you really don't need them after all. I'm here to let you know that it gets very quiet in the desert. So quiet, you can hear your pulse pound in your ears. So quiet, you can hear the voice of God. Your desert interlude may not occur in a literal desert. It might be in Mandeville or in Trenchtown or Cherry Hill. It might be that deep soul ache that comes with an unfaithful spouse or a rebellious teenager. It might be a failure at school or at a job or even a church. The desert wears many faces. It might be crowded with people, yet it is lonely. It may rain day and night, yet it is barren. Flowers may bloom and trees may blossom all around you, yet it is desolate. But it is in that desert, it is in that wilderness that God speaks loudest to you, because he has a plan for you. One night, Pharaoh dreamed a dream, and nobody in his court could interpret the dream. And that is where God comes into play. His time was right. He was on time. Genesis 41:9. And then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "I would make mention today of my own offenses. Pharaoh was furious with his servants, and he put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. And we had a dream on the same night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now a Hebrew youth was with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard, and we related them to him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each one he interpreted according to his own dream. And it came about that just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me in my office, but he hanged the other. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph." I'm rushing it. I'm bringing you to an end. How long have you been waiting in the wilderness? How long have you been parched in the desert? How long have you been seeking for answers? How long have you been praying for healing, for reprieve, or for deliverance? Too long, you say? Then hold on. Deliverance is at hand. And Joseph said to Pharaoh, I understand that you are with the answers. Pharaoh said, "Tell me what my dreams mean." When Joseph heard about the dream, he said, "Through me, God is going to tell you what he's about to do. I'm just the messenger." Then he proceeds to interpret the dream. Then Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find a man like this in whom is a divine spirit?" So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has informed you of all these things, there is no one deserving and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne will I be greater than you." Hold on, please. Go back with me a little bit to the pit in Shechem. Go back to Potiphar's house. Go back to the prison dungeon. Then come back with me slowly. Listen to the words. "Only in my throne will I be greater than you." You're kidding me. Slave, accused rapist, then governor. How do you get from there to here? I'll tell you. It's only by the grace of God. And I'm convinced, truly, that eagles don't dwell in sparrow's nest. After a while, the nest will be too small and God will move you out. God's promises are just as sure today as they were for Joseph. His grace is still at work. Read the chapters. It is about forgiveness. It is about Joseph with his brothers. This is a lesson about forgiveness. It's a lesson about letting God lead you in life. It's a lesson about letting bygones be bygones. This is about the importance of maintaining good family relations. So many times, the people hardest for us to forgive are those within our own families. Joseph never faulted his brothers for what they did. "You meant it for evil," he said, "but God sent me here to preserve life." Today, before the Sabbath is over, you must read the entire chapters from Genesis 43 through 45. Get another translation if you can. Read it slowly. Read it deliberately. Read it prayerfully. And then come away from it changed. The story is about my relationship. I am your brother. When Cain slew his brother Abel, and God came and Cain said to Cain, and Cain said, "Am I my brother's keeper?" No, Cain. "You are not your brother's keeper. You are your brother's brother." And that's a difference. My brothers and sisters, do you sometimes feel like giving up because everything you have tried has failed? Do you feel like wanting to walk away from it all because you cannot seem to make heads or tail out of your marriage, out of your job, or out of your life? Have you tried to find the money to go back to school or to do something you want to do but you can't, and you feel like quitting? Have you fumbled the ball and failed your family or your church or yourself? Just remember, the game is only half over. So start over again. God has a plan for you. God has a plan for the last one of you, every last one of you in this place. Right now, you cannot see the end from the beginning. You can't even see how you will make it through to the next day. But I want to assure you that God has a plan. "For I know the thoughts that I think towards you," said the Lord, "thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. Then shall you call upon me, and you shall go and pray unto me, and I will hearken unto you."